This interview was produced for Red Eye, a 3-hour current affairs program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
This Land Is Their Land is an audit of the BC government's oil and gas laws, recently published by Sierra Legal Defense Fund. The report evaluates the government in several areas, including regulation, environmental protection, and protection of First Nations rights. According to the report, a particular concern is the government's failure to protect landowner rights. BC laws give communities no rights and little voice in a system designed to meet the needs of industry. Gwen Johansson is a member of Custodians of the Peace, a landowner advocacy group in the Peace River region in northeastern British Columbia. She joined us from her home near Hudson's Hope. Good morning, Gwen.
Good morning.
Can you explain to us what happens to someone when an oil and gas company wants to start operating on their land?
Okay, well, the first thing that would have happened was that the subsurface rights would have been sold. So the right to exploit, say, oil and gas would have been put up for auction and sold. And the landowner is not notified of that sale. So you don't know necessarily that has occurred. So often the first contact that you probably will have as a landowner is when a landman who's an agent of the company comes to your home and requests an access agreement. And so you don't know, you have no idea of who you have been forced to deal with, because the lots of times the subsurface rights are purchased through land agents, and you don't know the company exactly. By the time the landman comes, then probably he will tell you who the company is. So if you come to an agreement as to what compensation should be for access and what conditions should be placed on the access agreement, then that's fine. So it goes ahead. And some number of landowners are happy or at least satisfied that they have oil and gas coming onto their property. They do get some small compensation. It's not a lot of money, but they do get some. So there are some that are happy. Where you usually run into disagreement is depending on the purpose that somebody has put their land for. Sometimes in a rural residential area, for instance, there will often be disagreement because the people who own the land are going to be located quite close to, say, the industrial activity. So that becomes an issue. Or sometimes if it's a wild, tourist installation business where they are selling wild experiences, wilderness experiences, sometimes that's a problem because the industrial activity then intrudes upon the wilderness and the experience that they're trying to sell. So then if you don't come to an agreement, then the company can take you to the Mediation and Arbitration Board, which has the right to grant a forced entry. And once that happens, then they also establish sort of compensation, and there's very little that a landowner can do in order to set conditions. He does have the right to ask for what they call alternate dispute resolution to go back to, but it basically that goes back to the same agency that granted the access. It doesn't go to the Mediation Arbitration Board, but it goes to the Oil and Gas Commission, who is the regulator. So basically you're appealing back to the same agency that granted the access in the first place.
So you can't stop the subsurface rights being sold, and then you can't stop the access as well?
That's true. Under the Mediation Petroleum and Natural Gas Act, the mediator or the chairman of the Mediation Arbitration Board, under Section 18, I think it is, has the right to deny access, but to my knowledge, it's never happened.
That a landlord's been able to say no?
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And is there any funding for them to deal with this process?
No. If you go all the way to arbitration, there is a possibility that costs might be awarded, but that's not a sure thing. So a landowner is sort of negotiating with a gun to his head, because he doesn't have the right to say no, and he's not on a level playing field when he goes into the negotiations because of the right of expropriation that basically has been granted to the company. And so because we're not talking a lot of compensation coming in, he probably doesn't have the means to take it to arbitration without any sort of assurance of getting some kind of award for cost. So he's at a distinct disadvantage when he goes into those negotiations.
And the Mediation and Arbitration Board is looking at the compensation only?
Yes.
Okay. You were involved... I'm sorry?
No, sorry, go ahead.
You were involved in an issues paper with Custodians of the Peace that was submitted to the BC government. Based on this research and also on your conversations and interactions with people in the region, what are some of the concerns of people who've had oil wells on their property?
Well, one of the people who has had oil and gas on their place, I think for about 50 years, told me that the biggest problem that she faced was having to police her own property, because it's a fairly large holding and you aren't out in every corner of it all the time. So sometimes, you know, you have to sort of feel an obligation to go out and check, which is time-consuming, to go and check an oil and gas installation to find out that, you know, what's happened. Weeds are a big problem, weeds that come in with machinery and trucks and so on that are going to various well sites, and they carry. And so if you have, say, a seed growing operation, that's a major, major problem. So that's one of the things. We have gates left open and fences cut, and somebody going out onto cropland off at least, that kind of thing. So there are a lot of incidental problems that people have to deal with. There's also the whole issue of health issues, and that's becoming increasingly important because a lot of the wells are sour gas wells, which have H2S, which is in certain concentrations it kills people, and there's a growing amount of anecdotal evidence that kind of suggests that chronic exposure to lower levels also causes health problems. And being as how wells, you know, can currently be located up to as close as 100 meters within 100 meters of a residence, that means that there is exposure to risk as health concerns.
Is the government doing anything with this evidence to try and protect people from some of these dangers?
Well, from what we understand, the government is reviewing its sour gas regulations. We don't have anything at the moment. We have asked that they should implement a precautionary principle. In the meantime, that's something that the federal government has committed to under the Environmental Protection Act, and it just means that sort of in the absence of scientific certainty that the agencies that grant licenses would err on the side of caution. We don't have agreement yet from the provincial government. The provincial government has said that they would work with us and with industry, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to work with them to come to some kind of mutual agreement that would work for everybody.
According to the Sierra Legal Report, there's also a lot of effects on the wildlife and natural resources of the region from oil and gas. Do you have any specific concerns that you'd like to talk to about the region's resources?
Well, cumulative impacts are a growing concern, because if you look simply at the cumulative impacts of just the oil and gas industry, when you have wells and roads and pipelines and compressors and various facilities, there's a growing industrialization of the land base. And then if you add to that the agriculture and mining and forestry and tourism, there is an issue of how much the land can stand in the end. And I think that's a growing concern.
Given that the government likes to focus a lot on the positive economic aspects of the oil and gas industry, and that growth in the industry has helped the government itself through its own revenue. Mm-hmm. Does this affect the regulatory environment?
Well, one of the things that we've suggested, at the present time, that you have two bodies. You have the ministry, and its role is to go out and promote the exploitation of the resource, and we accept that. The other agency is the Oil and Gas Commission, which is the regulator.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, the chairman of the Oil and Gas Commission is also the Deputy Minister of Energy, and we see that as being very difficult, because it's hard to see how you can have an independent regulator who is chaired by the ministry, which is promoting the use of oil and gas and the exploration for and production of it.
And so are there any changes specifically that you'd like to see happen?
Well, we would like to see that. We would like to see the Oil and Gas Commission to be independent once again. We would like to see some kind of a performance bond so that you had a when a company comes onto your property, that there was a specific amount of money, you know, set aside so that that had to be cleaned up. At the moment, that's done sort of on an industry-wide basis. We'd like to see it applied more specifically to wells. We would like to see some system of changing pipeline rights away, for instance, and that's one of the specifics, because right now pipeline rights away are granted in perpetuity in BC, and so as the years pass, use of the land changes, but you can't, sometimes that interferes with what your plans for the land might be. For instance, if you want to build in a certain spot, you can't, because you can't put a facility on top of a pipeline right away. You can't subdivide, for instance. And those are some of the issues that are coming up now, especially for rights of way that were granted 40 or 50 years ago. And we have one landowner who has, I think he said, 18 different rights of way on his farm. Five of them, he said, are not being used at the present time, but he can't get them removed, and they are starting to interfere with the use of his land.
So do companies need to be held more responsible, or...?
Well, we would like to see some sort of a... right now, there is a move towards results-based regulation, and we have some concerns about that, because if by the time the result is known, it's too late, perhaps, to do anything about it. And so we would like to see more checks and balances in place. The one-window agency where you have the Oil and Gas Commission sort of in charge of all aspects, it removes the checks and balances that could be there, where you might have, say, water, the Ministry of the Environment looking after water quality, for instance. The problem, as far as the government is concerned, of course, is that they want the one-window approach, so it streamlines the processes. We would like to see a little bit more stringent.
And then it becomes more difficult for industry?
That's the problem, yeah. So what we're trying to do is find some kind of a balancing act there.
Well, thank you for speaking with me this morning, Gwen.
You're very welcome.
I've been speaking with Gwen Johansson of the advocacy group Landowners of the Peace. You can find the report This Land is Their Land at Sierra Legal's website, which is www.sierralegal.org.
Red Eye is produced by an independent media collective and airs on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. You can hear the program from 9 until noon Pacific Time, streaming live at cooperadio.org.